sci-fi,
whoa,
anime,
whoa,
video games,
whoa,
comic books.
Whoa.
If you've been made fun of for it, we're probably going to talk about it.
This is Nerd Radio.
Excellent.
Welcome to this week's episode of Nerd Radio on your podcast RSS feed on the website and all over your social media at Nerd Radio 101.
The point is, if you're listening to this, you found us.
Hey! And we're happy to have you.
Hello und willkommen.
Absolutely. See, our German listener is real excited now.
Yeah,
I know what he said. I like to think he doesn't speak any English, but he just tunes in because sometimes...
Was ist das?
Sometimes your voice says stuff that he knows.
Dummkopf!
It's a lot like the way I watch anime.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what anybody's saying, but every now and again they'll say an English word, and I'll be like, I know that.
Yeah, yeah. I recognize that word, and I understand this one man's anger.
Yeah.
He's so upset about something.
Right,
I'm not really sure what, but...
Speaking of anime, that's where I'm going to start this week. This week is one of the two most important weeks, at least in my social calendar, as well as a lot of people. This weekend is YumaCon downtown Detroit, which is the big anime convention that we have every fall here. There's going to be people in cosplay. I will be among them running around.
Are you going to be changing it up while you're there, or do you have one?
I have one. I've spent quite a bit of money and had a friend made me a particular costume for this particular year. I don't want to give it away.
Well, yeah.
Follow our Nerd Radio feed on Instagram, Nerd Radio 101, or on Twitter or Facebook. You will see it. Because, like I said, I spent...
The funny thing is, you could tell me, and I would probably have no idea.
No, you'd be like...
It's an anime character, I assume?
It's a video game character mashed up with an anime character.
Oh, so I'm out.
Yeah.
Right. I'm out.
You're just like, I don't know.
No idea.
But if you're at all interested, YumaCon.com, YOUMACON, you can go right now, and I think you can still order your tickets, and you can head on down and watch some anime, play some games. There's a board game room. There's a huge arcade video game room that's open for a whole bunch of stuff.
The place with the table flipping game that you told me about?
It was the same people. Yeah, I can guarantee you that was a table flipping game there this year. Because most of the games...
I remember nothing. I remember this game.
But you remember
perfect
the table
for
flipping
me.
Game, right?
Yeah.
It's my favorite part when we played it
Is it called Catharsis?
I don't know. It's a Japanese game. It's like, it's all in Japanese, like all the voices and everything. So I don't know what it's called, but one of the levels you can do, because one of them is just like you can be an angry dude flipping a table. Another one is on the screen. They show a funeral going on.
Oh, no.
And you're the ghost of the guy in the coffin.
No.
And the object is to like bang the table, just bang on the table to like charge it up. And once you bang on the table a couple times, you flip it and it flips the coffin onto all the onlookers and scares the crap out of them.
Oh, no.
It's a funny game. Wish I knew what it was called.
So do I.
But speaking of games, it's finally time to cowboy up, my friend.
It sure is.
We finally got our hands on the new Red Dead Redemption 2.
Especially after that scare I mentioned last week about how they changed the release date. I got that email from the retailer.
Yeah.
And really, they changed it to the... last release date?
They pushed it back to last December.
Yeah. What?
In the email?
Why have I not been playing this?
So you've had a chance to mess with it.
I have. I got to play it a little, not as much as you would think.
What's your first impressions?
First impressions, I mean, honestly, the gameplay is very similar to the first one.
Mm-hmm.
There are some subtle differences, though, so it's not like it's the exact same game.
It seems increasingly more involved.
Yeah, it is a little more involved.
There's
certain things like... you know, your inventory of weapons, you just had access to all of them at all times.
Right.
And now you have to stash some in your saddle.
Yep.
So in your saddlebags. So if you need to think ahead, like I'm going to need a rifle and a shotgun. So you need to go over to your horse and make sure you get all that stuff before you head in for your mission or whatever.
Right.
Which I think is kind of cool. But at the same time, there's a part of me that's like, man, just give me the guns.
Yeah.
It looks pretty and realistic, but it's not. It's a video game. It's a friggin' fantasy.
It's
a fantasy. I'm escaping reality. That's the thing I don't like when video games get too real.
Right.
Like, I'm doing this to escape reality because I am sad. I don't need it to be more real. All right.
Yeah. It seems like it was off to kind of a slow start, game-wise, story-wise. But the more I've played of it, the more it feels like you needed that.
Yeah.
because much like the last Grand Theft Auto that you were playing, mm-hmm. like you, instead of it just being you and then these other side characters, something like that, like you're part of a crew
yeah.
of characters. And the more you play the game, the more they you interact with them, the more that their personalities shine through.
Yeah, the basic premise of the game is that I believe it takes place 2 years prior to the original Red Dead Redemption.
Yep.
I believe that was supposed to be 1901. This is 1899. And you do encounter John Marston,
yeah,
who was the main
on.
Character in the other one.
Yep.
So it's that crew. You know, Bill Williamson is the character from the original one that he's seeking revenge on, his old friend that screws him over and he wants revenge on him. Bill Williamson's in this gang, and so is Marston. But you don't play as Marston. You play as a different character. And I don't know, like you mentioned Grand Theft Auto 5, how they had three different guys that you alternated between.
Right.
I don't know if you're going to change it up and be somebody else, but, you know, you're at least... On the offset,
you're just playing this Arthur Morgan, I think it is.
Yeah, Arthur Morgan.
Yep.
But you do. It's kind of cool because you do interact with John Marston a little bit, and it's the same voice actor.
Yeah. As soon as
you see where he got the scars from on his face,
as soon as they said Marston, I was like, "Oh, really?" And then when you hear the voice, you're like, "Yep,
that's
John.
That's him."
All right. Neat.
Which is super cool. But I mean, like I said, the gameplay very similar. You know, not difficult to get the hang of. You know, like sometimes you'll get a new Madden game and you're used to the last one and they change like two buttons around on you and it's impossible to play for a while.
Right.
It's not like that. Some of the differences are just they're subtle, but the graphics are updated. But if you liked the cowboy story of the original, then yeah, you'll like this game too, I think.
You know? For sure. It's not, like I said, there's a lot more to it. It's because it's been years and years since the last, you know, Red Dead Redemption, since they made the game. So I was joking over the weekend with some friends that it's literally Cowboy Simulator.
Yeah.
Because, like, you got to feed your horse. You got to clean your guns. Yeah. You got to make sure.
Oh, you can pat your horse. You can keep it happy.
Yeah.
Which I think is cool.
You got to make sure that you got to make sure that you eat every couple of days, or that, you know, you make your guy sleep every couple of days, or else he's going to, you have like a.
Which that is, honestly, that's the stuff that I don't like.
Yeah.
Like when you have to feed your characters. Again, it's a fantasy. Why?
Right.
I remember to feed myself.
I'm in the same boat. I get it, but at the same time,
if I'm alive enough to push these buttons, clearly I am capable of feeding a person. Me, I don't need the practice on this fantasy whatever. But that kind of stuff honestly does kind of annoy me. But I'm such a fan of Red Dead. I don't think it's going to bother me any.
I had thought, I've been all weekend, I've been playing it. I thought Dutch, the guy who's essentially leading your gang.
Yeah.
I had thought that was, crap. Now I forget the actor's name. Hold on.
Yeah, I don't know, but he,
I thought it was Donald Sutherland.
Okay.
Because it sounds like Donald Sutherland. I just IMDb'd it. It is not. It is some other dude.
Is it a recognizable name? Because he definitely sounded familiar to me.
Benjamin Byron Davis.
Wait, that sounds...
I don't... He was in Ant-Man and Wasp. He was in one of the agents in Ant-Man and Wasp.
That name sounds familiar, though.
I do not know him. He's a big old guy with a beard with some gray in it. I guess he was in the first game, too, as Dutch, so that's cool. Here's the important questions, and I don't feel like I'm spoiling anything by asking you these questions. How many times you lost your hat?
At least twice.
Yeah, because I had to have somebody explain to me that, like, you can go back to your horse's saddle to get your hat back, because there's a mission early on where you get in a bar fight. I don't feel like that's a spoiler. You're going to get in a lot of bar fights, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But there's a mission early on where you get in a bar fight, and once I got done with the bar fight and I was covered in mud, I went to the hotel and got a bath, and then I went to bed, and I woke up the next morning and realized, where'd my hat go? So I went back to the saloon. First thing in the morning, it was on the ground. I'm like, oh, cool. It's right where I left it. Sweet. Give me that hat. The bartender's like, oh, we're not open yet. You need to leave. I'm like, I'm just getting my hat, dude. Don't get crazy on me. The other question I had for you, because I saw a lot of really funny videos over the weekend on Twitter. Have you ridden your horse dead into anything yet?
Into anything?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe I have. Like, I don't think I was going very fast, though.
Yeah, because I experienced it personally, firsthand, when I tried to, after the bar fight mission,
mm-hmm.
You need to figure out a way to get from town back to camp.
Uh-huh.
And you don't have your horse. and you can't buy a horse yet. So I was going to try and steal a horse, but as soon as you steal a horse, somebody sees you and then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what am I going to do? I don't know.
Just whistle for your horse. I don't think I played.
No,
because
it's all the way at camp. The horse is all the way at camp.
Does it matter now? Because in the first game, it didn't.
I tried whistling for my horse and I got nothing.
Oh.
Eventually I ended up, I grabbed a horse and I tried to ride him out of town as fast as possible. And as I was riding by the farm, I did not see the stack of firewood that was next to the building and just boom right into it and went just whoop right over the front of the horse. But my favorite thing was there's a thing in the game called cinematic mode now. You click on the PlayStation, you click the little pad in the middle, you hold that and it goes into cinematic mode, and then you just hold X and your horse will follow the path. And my favorite thing is that even though your horse will follow the path, the game does not take into account anybody who will be coming in the opposite direction on your path. I saw so many videos over the weekend of people just like running right into wagons, running right into other people. My favorite was a dude ran into another people's horse and they both went, the AI character, the NPC, went over the front of his horse and the character went over the front of his horse. The NPC got up and went, "You son of a bitch," and pulled his pistol out and shot him.
I do kind of like that you can interact with passersby. Like as you walk by someone, you can greet them, you can antagonize them, you can threaten them, like you can pull your gun on them.
I have a story about that as well.
Yeah?
Because, okay, so there are a lot of things that the different buttons do. One of the triggers will focus on a character, and that's how you greet or antagonize a passerby. You focus on them, and then you do the thing. Well, I didn't realize I had, on my weapon wheel, I had my gun listed. So I just went to, look at a passerby, and it wasn't even my gun. It was my bow and arrow for hunting.
Of course, yeah.
So I pull my dude. I click on the dude, and my dude pulls the bow and arrow, and the guy on the horseback pulls a gun, and is like, "Don't even think about it." I'm like, "Sorry." So I put my bow and arrow down, and he shot me.
Of course, I would too. Are you kidding me? I'm just out for a leisurely ride. And here comes, Sheriff Chuck and his bow and arrow.
I was just trying to say hi. I just wanted to say hi.
Well, you asked for it. Good Lord.
I have had a real good time, though.
I have, too. What little bit that I did play.
Yeah.
And I got a couple of busy weekends coming up, too. Like, I'm leaving town the next couple of weekends.
Right.
So we'll see how much I play it, but
it was slow to start. The online is not part of the game yet. That's the thing too. Like with the AI, with like running into the AI, running into other people, stuff like that, feels a little unfinished. Pretty beautiful, but gameplay wise, it feels like they were so busy making sure that you could see the snot on the character's nose when you're in the cold weather that they forgot that, like, oh yeah, sometimes like the AI is going to just run into each other. I also saw a really funny thing where there was somebody standing in the middle of the road and said, like the dude greeted them or something like that. And then this deer just came from off camera and just boom, right into him.
It's mass chaos.
It is. But it's a lot of fun. It's definitely been worth the wait. And it'll be interesting as the weeks go on, what kind of fun stuff we discover.
Yeah.
In Red Dead Redemption.
Hopefully I'll have more than 10 minutes to play it, but if not, it's okay.
Yeah. Right.
It's all right.
All right. Well, let's come back. Well, I got some nerd headlines for you.
We're going away.
Yeah, well, I got some nerd headlines for you, and I got some comics from this week to feature for you.
All right.
So we're coming back with Nerd Radio in just a second.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Hope you've cleared out your DVR. Time for Nerd Radio.
Spoilers.
Make it so.
Welcome back to Nerd Radio. I'm all over.
Take 2 and action!
Welcome back to Nerd Radio, all over your social media at Nerd Radio 101.
Live on the internet!
Yes, we live
worldwide!
All over the
domination.
Mr. L. Beck.
130 people heard this across the world.
and Mr. Chuck Veen hanging out in the studio with you. Al, it is a huge week, as I said at the top of the show. I do have a lot to get to. Where would you like to start? You want to talk about the news that's going on in the world of nerds? You want to talk about some comics that are coming out this week? What are you feeling?
Let's do the news, and we'll wrap up with the comics, I think.
Sounds good. All right. Yeah. Deadpool 2 is getting a PG-13 re-release.
I heard about this.
And it's called The Deadpool Before Christmas. It's supposed to have an additional 15 minutes worth of footage.
Oh, see, that I had not heard.
Yeah, it's 15 minutes that they went back and shot. And some of that footage, as we saw on social media, I think Ryan Reynolds had posted, features Fred Savage and an homage to the Princess Bride.
Oh, good.
Do you feel like going back to the theater to see Deadpool 2?
To the theater? No.
Yeah.
But I would purchase that. I would buy that and watch it again.
Have you already gotten like the big ultra deluxe Deadpool 2 DVD, Blu-ray or anything yet?
No.
So you've waited and it's worked out for you now.
Yeah.
Because there'll be this version.
Right.
That'll be pretty cool.
No, I think that's a great idea though, because part of the draw of that movie is the fact that they went R-rated.
Yeah.
But there's still plenty to enjoy about it.
For sure.
That if it was PG-13. They did a really good job on that character and the stories. But you're just opening up the audience to a younger crowd that couldn't or should not have been exposed to Deadpool.
A lot
of them have been, and that's bad parenting. If you're a parent that I will say it, if you are a parent that took your kid to Deadpool and they're young, you are that bad judgment, terrible judgment. That movie should not be viewed by children. But anyway, I like that they kind of open up the audience a little bit, but by adding that extra footage, it gives, you know, like the parents who now have seen it and now are taking their kids to see, it gives you something else to see, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
It's just a different version of the movie, like a different cut. I like it. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I'm interested to see. I don't know that I'll go to the theater, much like yourself.
Deadpool's my guy. Like, I collect all things Deadpool when it comes to comics. I love Deadpool. One of my favorite characters. I'm not going to the theater for that.
Well,
I haven't seen Ant-Man and the Wasp. I still haven't seen Venom.
You gotta see Ant-Man and the Wasp, man. It's so fun.
Yeah, well, I'll just get to it.
So much fun.
7 years from now. Something, I don't know.
Well, a show we both checked out on, the 9th season of The Walking Dead this Sunday.
Yeah.
The final episode for Rick Grimes. All right.
We done with that story yet?
Also coming up.
Honestly, it's so fun. I just don't care. I don't care about Walking Dead anymore, unless you want to talk about the comic book.
Can you think of even Star Trek go 9 seasons in any of its iterations?
No.
Like, I'm trying to think, is there a particular TV show that you love so much that you could see watching it for about a decade worth of shows? Because I
feel like a decade is kind of that sweet zone that most shows go, but they could have wrapped up a little bit earlier.
Yeah, like even
Seinfeld was 9 seasons.
Most shows that go 9 or 10 seasons, something like that.
Yeah,
like
beloved MASH was 11.
You know that there's weak seasons in there, even if it's a show you absolutely love.
And you typically find that the final season is one of the weaker ones for most shows, I think.
Right.
I think Breaking Bad was like the perfect show to me.
Yeah, and that was what, 7?
It was 6. Technically, it was 5, but all that 5 part 1, part 2, I don't buy that bull crap.
Right,
it was 6 seasons.
That just counts as one season.
It's just because you gave us a short season and we were shortchanged. Don't try and pull this part 2 crap. It was a whole year.
Right.
It was a whole year! It was 6 seasons.
Okay. It was 6 seasons. Well, another show that's
I'm
gone.
Sorry, I hadn't yelled in that's about fair. 3.5 minutes.
Yeah, no, your therapist told you that you need every couple of minutes, you need to have some kind of primal something going on. Another show that's gone quite a few seasons, The Simpsons. I'm sure you've heard the hubbub about Apu.
Yeah,
them talking about whether or not they're going to kind of write him out of the show.
It looks like they're dropping them.
Yeah, it sounds like one producer says they're dropping them, and then somebody else is like, no, we don't have any plans for that yet, so.
I don't know. I don't even know what to say about it, because I know that the news had come out that they were going to drop the character.
Right.
And there was that documentary, like, I can't remember what's wrong with Apu or whatever it was called, but it's basically pointing out the racism and stereotype, and I think part of it, the fact that Hank Azaria is a white guy doing an Indian character,
right,
which is just voice acting, but you know what I mean, but you got this documentary that points out Apu's pretty racist, and then the Simpsons are like, all right, cool, you got us, I guess. Like, we'll just get rid of him then. We won't have this racist character on our show anymore. And then the documentary guy's like, well, I'd rather you address it. Like, they're getting rid of the character.
Yeah.
Like, you started this whole ball rolling. You're getting what you wanted. You don't get to change it now.
Right.
I'm annoyed by that. I mean, I'm not annoyed that he made a documentary. If he felt strongly about it and he felt like he wanted to voice his opinion, then of course that's what you're supposed to do. That's
he wanted some kind of action done, but not this action.
Yeah, but it's like,
which is basically what he's coming up with.
Well, what do you want? they're you're not being ignored. That's the thing,
right?
You said I have a problem with this, and the Simpsons, who've been around for 70 years on television, said, you know what? You're right. We'll take care of it. And he's like, well, not like that,
right? Well, it's the kind of thing where, like, when the Simpsons started, then, like, yeah, that you know, it was kind of a funny joke. And then years and years and years later, it's insensitive, and people are like, I don't know about Apu. I feel like Apu has always been such a part of the show.
Yeah.
That while you may, on the surface, you look at him, he's like, oh, he's a stereotype joke.
Right.
Okay, whatever. Like, there's been so many episodes and stories about Apu that I don't know. I don't feel it.
I feel like the character's been fleshed out.
Yeah, he's been ingrained into the society of Springfield. So,
yeah, I mean, but again, the complaints are coming from a perspective that you and I don't have, nor would we be able to understand. So, like I said, I don't have any beef with the guy that made the documentary for making the documentary. My issue I take is they are trying to take care of it, and it's just not being handled the way he wants. So it's like, come on, man. Like,
yeah.
You got a problem with the character. The character's going away, and now you got a problem with the character going away. Like, with the internet, you can't win. My point. Yeah,
but you can always win here on Nerd Radio.
Well, anyone but the hosts.
Let's talk about some comics. This is something that we haven't really addressed since it's been going on. I think it started over the summer, but DC Comics has been putting out books exclusive to Walmart for the last couple of months. They're mostly reprints. One of them is called Batman Giant.
Did you get your Walmart reprint of Batman?
Okay, well, here's the thing. There's a Batman book called Batman Giant.
You think the Bat Dicks at Walmart getting reprinted at Walmart?
No, I don't believe so. But here's the thing. While it is mostly reprints, it does have brand new stories. The Batman book has a brand new story, which is written by Brian Michael Bendis.
What?
Every month that comes out in this Walmart book.
So Brian Michael Bendis is writing in a Walmart exclusive.
Yes. The Superman book has a exclusive story along with the reprints, which is written by Tom King.
This is like bizarro land. What is going on?
Yeah, no, it's and because it's, you know, Walmart, like, you can't really. I've talked to plenty of comic book fans that are very upset because, like, they don't do comics,
so no.
they don't care about, like, release date or anything like that. Like, if this Batman book came out, let's say today, your local Walmart might not put it on the shelf for a month.
Right.
It might just sit in a box in the back because whatever, we'll get to it when we get to it, kind of thing.
Right. Because, like, I mean, this isn't even a dig at Walmart. It's just, who goes to Walmart for comic books?
Right, right.
But if you happen to be there, you're there picking up a t-shirt or whatever, I don't care. You're there picking something up and you happen to walk by and go, oh, hey, Batman. Like, that's the only time you're going to buy a comic at Walmart. You know, and you seek out comics, or me too.
Well, that's a lot of people in the comic book industry are very upset about these books because they have this exclusive content in them. I have to believe that stuff's going to get reprinted in, like, I don't know, a trade paperback of some sort or whatever. Like, it'll be collected. It's just that if you want it right now, you got to get the Walmart book, which is kind of a bummer. The reason I bring this up is because Batman Giant number 4, which is part 2 of Bendis' Batman story, introduces Ginny Hex, the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter of Jonah Hex.
All right.
She's going to be featured in...
you know, I like my Jonah Hex.
I do. That's why I wanted to fill you in on this. She's going to be featured in the Young Justice book that Brian Michael Bendis will be doing around the end of the year.
Okay.
But this is her first appearance is in a book you can only get at Walmart.
First appearance of Ginny Hex.
Yes. So
exclusively at Walmart.
Speaking of comics, let's talk about some of the stuff that came out this week. It is the fifth week, the last week of the month. It is Halloween.
Yeah.
And a couple of books...
Halloween.
A couple of books came out that I wanted
Very
to
spooky.
Bring to your attention. Batman's Secret Files. It's a bit of a It's a bit of an anthology book, but it features a Tom King story that kind of bookends the book at the front and the back of the book, and features a story you can see right on the first page where Superman offers Batman platinum kryptonite, apparently very early in his career, which if he would have touched it, would have given him powers just like Superman. Forever.
Ooh.
And Batman chose not to.
Why?
I haven't read it yet. I don't know.
I don't know if I purchased this or not. I didn't. I got my books. I didn't flip through them though.
Right, but I'm interested to. I'm interested to see why. And it's got a shiny cover too, which is kind of cool. I like the shiny covers they've been doing this month in the. Also coming out over on the Marvel side of things is the Avengers Halloween special.
Ooh.
Normally it's a $4.99 book. It's, you know, a special. Normally I wouldn't really care about this except for it's a bunch of short stories taking some of your favorite Marvel characters and turning them on their side, making them scary as hell.
Yeah.
There's my favorite story in here that when I flip through it is there's a story with the Avengers where when they took Captain America out of the ice. It's essentially John Carpenter's The Thing. He's infected with some stuff. Deadpool's a part of this story too, which is pretty great.
I like that. That's cool.
There's also a Daredevil story in here where he sees some horrific stuff because he's got a hallucinogen in his eyes. There's a Fantastic Four story where they are the monsters and Dr. Doom is the hero. It's pretty neat. Like I said, the thing that really attracted me to it was a Captain America story based on... John Carpenter's The Thing, because I love that movie.
Yeah, so I was actually talking to Worm earlier today that it seemed like, you know, as we record this, it is currently Halloween.
Yes.
But by the time the podcast gets posted, it will be a couple days later. And who knows, maybe you download this a month from now. We were talking that on Halloween was when they released a bunch of their Halloween books.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems like maybe you would have done that
last week
or even just like throughout, like sprinkled it throughout October.
Right.
Instead of like, all right, well, good. It's Halloween today. I don't really want to. I'm kind of done by tomorrow.
You better get to the comic store. Halloween books.
Hell, he said that there was even a couple Halloween books that he wasn't going to get until next week.
Oh, geez.
Well, now it's November at that point.
Right. Well, there was the Scott Snyder book, Witches, that he did for Image.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was a one shot specifically for today for Halloween.
Yeah.
And I didn't even see it at the comic store when I was picking my books up. I was like, somebody had mentioned it to me, and I looked it up. And I was like, oh, I guess that was a thing that was supposed to come out. So I don't know. Speaking of Halloween books, though, the last book I wanted to bring up, I do not collect Mad magazines.
Okay.
I want to say that right off the bat. But this particular issue of Mad magazine has been all over social media and all over. There was an NPR thing about it because... there's a part in it called the Ghastly Gun Tinies that's kind of an A through Z of these little kids, and it kind of
A to Z.
It takes on school shootings, and it's kind of dark. But the reason I wanted to bring it up is because the artist, if you'll notice on that first page, is the man.
Oh,
right. I should say the boy.
Just collided with the microphone.
The man when he was a boy that got me into comic books.
Really?
Longtime childhood friend Mark Palm. Makes his Mad magazine debut this in this particular issue of Mad magazine.
This is a person that you know.
Yes.
Oh.
And I could not be prouder. It's absolutely fantastic to, like I said, this is the guy, he grew up when I was growing up around like fourth, fifth grade or something like that. He was living in the house behind me. We played with Transformers and G.I. Joes and stuff like that. He collected superhero books. I was just collecting my Ninja Turtles, my Transformers comics. And after, you know, staying in his house a couple of times and reading some X-Men, I was like, this superhero thing seems kind of cool.
Yeah.
But like I said, I could not be beyond proud. And like I said, it's been everywhere. Like NPR.
Are you guys still in touch?
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So, Mark, if you're, I would hope you're listening to this episode of Nerd Radio. I'm super proud of you. I can't wait to see even more stuff. He's done a couple of things for Fantagraphics books over the last couple of years, but this is like kind of his first huge break.
Yeah. That's awesome. Good for him. Good for him.
Absolutely cool stuff. So hit up your comic book store near you. Check out these books. Check out other books. And then let us know on our. On our social media, Nerd Radio 101. Hit up comicshoplocator.com and find your local comic book store. That's about all I got. for this week.
That's it. We're empty.
My good sir.
We've unloaded it all.
Yeah, a little bit. We're going to, I'm going to bring, Mr. Steve Black in from the Sound of, and, we're going to talk about this season, Doctor Who.
A little crossover action.
A little crossover action. So stay tuned. Time and space.
Yes. Timey-wimey. Coming up next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Hey, this is Troy Baker, and you are listening to Nerd Radio.
Catch, Booker.
Nice.
Here we go.
Bunch of blinds.
Booker, here. Take this.
That'll do.
Booker, catch.
Welcome back to Nerd Radio on the podcast page at, WRAF.com, on the iTunes feed, on the social media, Nerd Radio 101. We're everywhere. Absolutely everywhere. It's Mr. Chuck Bean and Mr. Jefferson Moore.
Yeah.
Hanging out in the studio. Jefferson, I've been wanting to talk to you for a couple of weeks now. I finished Metal Gear Solid 5.
Oh, yeah.
But I think you're going to be disappointed in how I finished Metal Gear Solid 5.
Well, now I want to hear about it.
Because, obviously, for those who have played Metal Gear Solid 5, for those who haven't, we're going to spoil the hell out of it. But for those who have, you fight the robot almost like halfway through the game.
Yeah.
And then the game's kind of over, but there's like these epilogue missions
mm-hmm.
that you got to do. And I got through most of them. Most of them. I got two missions away from essentially what is the end of the game. The last mission is where you have to is with Quiet. It's called a Quiet Exit, I guess.
Yeah.
And you have to cover her. And I was having trouble doing that, so I figured I'd look it up online, see what's going on. And I saw exactly how long the mission was, and decided I don't need to do that. I'm just gonna watch the cinema screens on YouTube to see how this particular part of the game ends. And then that meant that I couldn't unlock the actual final mission of the game. So I just watched that on YouTube as well. Because you know what? I've been playing this game for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah.
And at this point, and this is one of the reasons I want to bring it up, because by the time I got there, the reason I'd made that decision is because at this point, it feels like that piece of meat that you've just been chewing on forever. And mm-hmm. there's nothing left of it, and you don't
just ready for it to
you
be
just
done.
Want to spit it out. You don't even it's not even appealing or appetizing anymore. And I'm fascinated at this point in gaming how many games are like that.
Yeah.
How many games try and put so much content in them. For instance, you know, my games on my Switch, like Super Mario Odyssey, like once you're done with the game, guess what? You've only collected like 300 of the 900, you know, stars. So
that's,
you can
that's
continue
being
playing
generous.
Them.
Normally,
it feels like so many games nowadays put this end game content in of like it feels like they're desperately clinging on to you, like grabbing your sweater vest you've mm-hmm. got there and going like, no, don't leave me. Please keep playing the game. Don't go play in another game.
Yeah, like a lot of times it comes down to just, you know, New Game Plus. You're like, oh, you want to play, keep on playing it? Well, now you can start it over from the beginning, but you keep all your stuff.
Right. Well, that's the thing is it's not even, you know, like at least with something like Borderlands where it's a New Game Plus, mm-hmm. like it's very easy to be like, well, I've kind of seen it all.
Right.
I don't need to do the extra stuff. Whereas, like I said, these other games that, you know, put this extra content in there where, you know, like Metal Gear, like when you've beaten mm-hmm. the game, you actually haven't seen you haven't beaten the entire game kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
You know, or Mario. And
there's
like,
still more content that happens in the canon.
It almost makes me miss the days of like, hey, you know, I played this game over the weekend and then it was over. And then, you know, I can finally remember it and move on to something new.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people are so impatient nowadays, and they don't necessarily want that anymore. They just want to keep on. Oh, I really like this game,
which is weird because I do.
Playing. I know. Yeah.
But it also leads me to this thing where, like, we talked to Al a month ago or something about that. About he picked up, you know, Final Fantasy 15,
right,
for like $10 or $15, mm-hmm. and that's like the going price now. Mm-hmm. For it is $10 or $15. I was at one of the local game resale shops and noticed that Prey, a game that me and you were super into, also going for about $10 now.
Yeah,
if you want to pick it up on a, you know, PlayStation or an Xbox. I picked up Mass Effect Andromeda for about $10.
Yeah.
And all three of these games have in common, these are all, you know, AAA titles that, you know, came out within the last 12 months that were a huge deal. But what they all have in common is that they all have downloadable content that even if you only spent, Metal Gear is one of them as well, even if you only spent, you know, $10 getting this game, there's still like $60 in downloadable content
that
you're missing when you get this $10 version of the game. That's weird to me. And I don't think it's just because I'm old.
That's part of it. But
does that not seem weird to you?
No, it does seem weird to me. Just because that's not how games used to be, you know? And I'm not sure when that actually started. I'm thinking about, like, with Pokemon games, for instance, you beat the Elite Four and that's like the end of the game, you know?
Right.
You see the credits go down. But then there's the legendary Pokemon that ends up in the end.
Yeah, you could continue catching guys and filling out your Pokedex and stuff like that. But it's the difference between stuff that's extra that you could do and stuff that's mandatory. That's like, oh, you haven't seen everything.
Yeah.
Oh, you better play that. Like Metal Gear felt like definitely the most felt like, oh, well, if you stop playing now, you haven't actually finished it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the F?
I played the game, man. Give me my reward.
And
that's interesting, too, because so much about games is seriously just about the carrot that they dangle in front of
For sure.
Gamers is just the end of the story.
Yeah.
And when the credits roll, like you just kind of leave the gamer confused when they don't get a bite of that carrot, you know?
Right.
At the very end. And
yeah.
They keep on dangling in front of you. And then they're just like, I'm just confused. Like, do we keep on going for it?
Right.
And it's kind of weird like that. And
it's one thing, like you mentioned Pokemon, like when you add a couple hours of content at the end of the game is one thing. But when you look at something like Super Mario Odyssey, like you've literally only played half the game when you've gotten the credits to roll and you've seen the story. And now, you know, you can go back and, you know, collect more power moons and see more things and get more costumes and stuff like that. Like, you know, even something like Red Dead Redemption, the first Red Dead Redemption, when they added the zombie downloadable content, like that was only another like 5 hours of gameplay tops. Yeah. And you've already dropped, you know, 20 to 40 hours in the game. So that's a drop in the bucket compared to what you've already played for it. It's weird to me to only be halfway done with the game and then, you know, them roll credits and be like, OK, well, that's the end of the story, but there's still more.
I do hear that. Yeah. And there's some interesting things with that, too, because not all games are like that. Like,
not at all. No, I'm not saying like every game on the planet, but it feels like a lot of games, like that's kind of how games work now.
Yeah.
Like a lot of games either have a bunch of back end content or have this like, hey, games nowadays have to have downloadable content. It seems like you just have to have extra downloadable content that are good, which I'm still of the mentality like, dude, I just spent $60 on this game. Why do I got to continue to give you $20 every couple of months for more game? I don't look at it as, oh boy, I get more game for $20. I'm like, oh, I'm missing part of my game.
Yeah. And oddly enough, one of the things that pops up for me the most is Dishonored, another Arkane game studio. The first Dishonored was great, and then they added like another DLC, which came in three installments. That added, it wasn't part of the same story because it was a different main character, but a whole different side of it. And I felt like that was a good way to do it because I didn't feel like I was missing out on the main story. Like they didn't carve out a chunk of the main story and sell it to you later. It's like, here's this world that we made for you. Here you go. Here's some more missions that you can do. That kind of fleshes things out a little more. And I think that's more the way to do it.
I felt like the Borderlands series was real good at that too.
Yeah.
At like the downloadable content didn't feel like this was already part of the game.
Right.
And you just kind of robbed me of it. It felt like, no, this is that's extra true. Stuff you added in kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the danger line that a lot of game manufacturers need to keep in mind. Like, If you're cutting out too much from the game, people are going to feel cheated.
Because I definitely like with the WWE games every year, like I don't buy them right when they come out, but there's always like the downloadable content packs are like extra characters.
Yeah.
And I always feel like, dude, those characters, you could have just given them to me.
Right.
You didn't have to make the extra characters downloadable.
Oh, example of a game that does that wrong, Destiny, which we've talked about a couple times. But seriously, it was a free game of the month, I think in October, so this month,
right?
For PS Plus members, and it was like, okay, cool, I'm gonna pick that up, and I started playing it, and then just. You literally see other characters at level 50 when you cap out at level 20. And then that just leaves you just like, okay, well, I don't want to play it anymore because I can't advance anymore.
Sure.
And it's basically just canned Radiant missions, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, go here, do that, kill these things. Oh, and guess what? When you get back, there's going to be 5 more of the same exact mission.
Ugh.
So that's an example of how to do it badly. And then the DLC is another $60. And like even for Destiny 1, all the DLC is still $60. I don't understand how they do that.
Yeah, it's really, really odd that especially like with downloadable content, like when they started making downloadable content for games, it was always like $10, $20 if it was something cool or something like that. But to make downloadable content that's like literally as expensive as the game you just bought just seems exorbitant.
Now, there's also a couple of other things that have come out that I personally hadn't come across too much. Like there was this, I want to call it a module, like a 20, it's a game that was new. It was advertised as like a new game, but it's much shorter and it comes out for $20 for its initial launch.
Oh, sure.
And that's happened quite a bit more. Like
a lot of the Telltale games would like you would get the first chapter and then each additional chapter, like every month or something like that would be, you know.
But it's even a little different than that. Like Dishonored had one because Dishonored 2 came out, and I don't believe that has any DLC, but they released standalone adventure. I think that's what they call them, standalone adventures, that kind of told the end of that story for $20. But it wasn't telling the same story as Dishonored 2.
Right.
So I didn't feel cheated by it. It was just like, oh, cool, here's some extra content that I can buy. And then another one that was like that was, it was an Uncharted game where you had to play as two of the side characters. That I'm skipping on the name right now, but it was $20. It came out as a standalone game.
I know that when I got like Uncharted 3, I got it digitally, and I got like the Game of the Year edition. So it came with like 4,000 different downloadable content things, which made it really hard on the PlayStation 3 to like find the ones I wanted to download and sift through the other ones. They really need to, you know, they're not gonna because it's last generation's PlayStation, but they really need to fix the store on the PlayStation 3. It's a big pain in the butt. But I thought, you know, of like the BioShock games, those had downloadable content to them. And those definitely felt like something that added to the game, but wasn't necessary to the game.
What comes to mind for me is BioShock 2, which honestly, I think that the DLC was better than the original game itself.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's that particular thing that absolutely doesn't feel like it was, you know, like already there and they just kind of robbed you of it.
A completely different character. Yeah, that was very well done as well.
Yeah.
A DLC that worked.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, hopefully Red Dead Redemption, we've both been super excited for that. Hopefully that's absolutely going to work. And hopefully I didn't disappoint you too badly by not physically playing the last couple of bits of Metal Gear Solid 5.
Nah, don't worry about it. Although I do have one more question about that. Did you play through the that one mission where you replayed the first mission, but
any mission I had to replay a mission? Oh, yes. Yes, that was the other, that was the mission
the
I couldn't.
True mission.
Yeah. That was the mission I hadn't unlocked by not playing Quiet, so I just watched it. I watched it, but I did see the twist to the ending.
Because I did like that part. Like, it was like,
that's interesting. Yeah, well, because at the beginning of the game, they ask you to like pick a face for your character, but then you spend the rest of the game just being Solid Snake. And trust me, I'd been thinking about that the whole time I was playing. It's like, why did you make me do that? Why is it? Well, there's a reason. And you find out at the very end.
Yeah. And I think they could have done that a little better, just because honestly, these could have gone like towards the end, like before you defeat Sahelanthropus,
right?
Which is a weird name for Metal Gear.
It's interesting because I don't remember it ever coming up throughout the rest of the game. Like, nobody ever treats you differently,
no.
And they honestly should. for reasons you find out at the very end of the game. That I will not spoil for anybody who has not played Metal Gear Solid 5. You definitely, at the very least, you want to do what I do and go online and watch it on YouTube.
It's always an option nowadays.
It is. It is, absolutely. What else? Is there anything else coming out this around this holiday season besides Red Dead Redemption that you're super pumped for?
No, that's the biggest thing.
Because I feel like I was talking to Kyle and Kenny about this in a previous episode, which you can get in our archives on the podcast page, Nerd Radio. But the fact that, like, I didn't realize that, like, I didn't realize Red Dead Redemption 2 was, like, the end of October. But then also looking at stuff like Diablo for the Switch comes out the next week. Pokemon game for the Switch is in November. Obviously a lot of the stuff that I'm super pumped for is the Switch because it's my new toy.
Sure.
But at the same time, there's, you know, the Spider-Man game just came out.
Spider-Man, yep.
You know, there's a lot of good stuff this season, this holiday.
So yeah, but I mean, Spider-Man came out a little while ago.
Yeah, it was September. Yeah. September, but I still kind of count it because it's still going to be
last month. What am I talking about? That's not too.
It's not too. Yeah. Well, you know, there are people obviously that have beaten Spider-Man, but it's a big sandbox game that you can very obviously still be playing
right
now.
Into, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And once it drops to a price that I can afford, and I decide that I will gut through my motion sickness problems with it and just play it for an hour here and there, it's definitely on my radar because it was when I rented it, it was absolutely fascinating. It was a great game.
Yeah, the web slinging, like I played a little bit of it too, and the web slinging feels natural.
It does.
The combat is a little bit tricky to get the hang of, but
yeah,
I mean, it
look
it's
out
simple
for dudes.
Enough.
Look out for dudes with crowbars.
Yeah, crowbars are.
Never had no idea that was the kryptonite for Spider-Man.
Right, crowbars.
Oh, it's a metal crowbar.
Yeah. If only it was.
I also thought, like I mentioned when I talked about it before, I found it hilarious that, like, it's impossible to get across New York because every time you get like two city blocks away from the last thing you did, somebody's like, "Spider-Man, help me!" And you're like, I don't have to, but I am Spider-Man. I probably should.
That neighborhood, yeah. Gotta keep that neighborhood friendly.
Exactly. All right, man. Well, it's fun talking to you about games, man.
Yeah, definitely.
Of course, hit us up on our social media. Talk to us about what games you guys are playing, what games you guys are looking forward to at Nerd Radio 101. And we're coming back right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I'm Tony Maiello and you're listening to Nerd Radio.
Truly, you have a dizzying it.
Wait till I get going!
Where was I?
All right, welcome back to Nerd Radio, all over your podcast page, your RSS feed, and your social media at Nerd Radio 101. It is Chuck Bean, Al Beck, still hanging out in the studio, and Mr. Steve Black from The Sound Of.
Yo.
Coming back to the show to talk a little timey-wimey Doctor Who.
Yeah.
As we've gotten our show back.
It's nice to have it
finally,
back.
Finally.
You know, it's always good when a show takes a break because you don't realize you need a little refresher. But then when it comes back, it just feels so good.
Yeah.
Can I tell you that's actually one thing that worries me about they're starting to fill up with Star Trek shows?
Yeah.
You know, like I'm enjoying Discovery. I'm really excited about this Picard show, but I know they've got some other stuff in the works. And it almost feels like we're going to get to a point where one Star Trek show is going to wrap up, another one's going to start, and around the calendar. And it's not going to give us a chance to really kind of, as you're saying with Doctor Who, we had a little break. And then it comes back. We're super excited. I'm a little bit worried about Star Trek in that sense.
If they do it right, though, remember that the glory, glory, glory days of Star Trek, you had Next Generation running, you had Deep Space Nine running, and just moments after that, Enterprise.
Voyager
and
was in there,
fantastic.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's what I meant, Voyager.
Voyager, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, sorry.
I'm glad you brought up Star Trek. It's something I actually, we did our... we. Hit the headlines last segment, but I didn't bring this up because I wanted to see if I had both you guys in the thing. Did you guys hear about the Star Trek comedy that CBS is talking about?
The animated.
Yeah, yeah, Lower Decks, where they're gonna do like they did with Space Ghost Coast to Coast. They're gonna take
I hadn't heard this.
They're gonna take the old animated stuff and like rejigger it so that they can turn it into like
or Sea Lab was another one. They did an Adult Swim where they took an old cartoon and then just made it goofy. But yeah, it's supposed to be about, you know, a whole bunch of
like people who you would never see on a regular Star Trek show.
Okay.
Like the grunts that make the ship work. You know, the guy who has to go, you know, scrub the plasma conduits.
Yeah, the bus boy at 10 forward.
The
guy,
you got it.
The guy exactly. who cleans the holodeck.
Oh God! After Riker's been in there. Oh my God!
Yeah, one of the guys that works in Rick and Morty is supposed to be heading up this show. So it'll be. I'm interested to see. I would have to imagine that's got to be.
Wouldn't
on the streaming
you just
service.
Create a holo character that cleans up the holodeck?
You would hope so.
You think? I don't know, though. I mean,
run program 4835B.
Chief O'Brien has been soaking wet in the medical bay after a kayaking accident before. So, I mean,
that's true.
I don't know. I don't know exactly how the holodeck works. It shouldn't, though. Like, you would walk out of there and they're like, you should be dry immediately.
Well, no, because your clothes are real. And so if they went into the holographic water, which becomes real while you're in it, then your clothes would remain wet unless you had your clothes removed.
But when you walk out, though, that real water would cease to exist when you leave the... We brought him in to talk about Doctor Who.
I'm loving this. This is so nerdy. I'm loving it.
Where's Neil deGrasse Tyson?
I know. I know. But this is, I mean, the funny thing is, like, I almost forgot we were doing a podcast because this is just me and Steve.
Yeah, this is just normal. Yeah,
I love it.
This is exactly how he and I, the only difference is I'm wearing my headphones while we have this conversation.
See, I think like Steve saying, like, well, the holodeck, much like the replicator, once the water hits you, it turns it into actual water. And that's
why it
stays.
It turns it into part of your...
Well, everything in there becomes matter,
right?
But within the confines of the holodeck. So the water created by the holodeck should cease to exist as you exit the holodeck. Like, I mean, you know, if you jump in a creek in real life, you are wet because you still have the water and it evaporates as you, and that's how you dry.
I do agree with you.
Yeah.
I just happen to think that
are you just trying to explain why Chief O'Brien was wet in the medical bay?
Believe it or not, I was thinking of Dr. Crusher after she fell off the ship.
Oh, yeah.
When they made her walk the plank or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, or no, Data pushed her over.
Yeah.
But anyway, to me, like he said, like a matter conversion deal. Once it's on you and it's part of you, I think it becomes
Which means that much like the X-Men's Danger Room, the holodeck must have some fail-safes in place to stop it from accidentally drowning you.
Mm. Right. Safety protocol.
Right.
Anyway. Yeah,
exactly.
So that was everything I know about the new Doctor Who.
Now I'd like to discuss how it would work on the Imagitorium from a Community.
All right, fair enough. Absolutely. Man, I miss that show. That show was so
fun.
Such
a good show, yeah.
So the big news going into this new Doctor Who is this is the first time the Doctor is officially a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Played by... Crap, I can't remember.
Had a close call, though. Remember,
Jodie Whittaker,
yes.
Matt Smith thought he was a girl when he first, you remember.
Yeah, because of the hair.
Yeah.
We're about four episodes deep as we sit here to talk about this. What do you guys think so far of the season?
First, I want to comment on, you said it's the first time she's been a woman, but there have been multiple mentions in the first four seasons where she's talked about being a woman again.
Yes, that's true.
So at some point, they're going to reveal when she was a woman before. So, it's an interesting seed that they've planted.
Yeah, the Doctor has said in one of the episodes about something about it's been a while since I had to buy women's clothes.
Yes, I recall that. But that honestly, that's the question because I feel like we have seen the Doctor throughout his history. And we even had, was it John Hurt played the, like,
yeah,
who he was before his first regeneration?
Yeah, referred to as the War Doctor.
The War Doctor.
I was calling him Dr. Zero, but his official title is the War
Doctor.
The
War Doctor. So, I mean, we've seen every version of the Doctor, and there hasn't been a woman in there. So I'm curious to how they're going to explain these little... Because I noticed that, too.
My guess was there was something before John Hurt. Something before Dr. Zero.
Okay.
Because he was the War Doctor. He was the one who, you know, essentially committed genocide on his own people. Of course, we later realize he didn't do that.
But, right.
But who's to say that there wasn't, to go even further back in time, that there wasn't another
sure
You know,
well, like, and even back when they were like, he only gets 12 or 13 regeneration, something like that. It's like, yeah, but all the Time Lord rules seem kind of fluid. Like, what if Time Lords just tell everybody that, but that's not real? They can regenerate as many times as they need to. It doesn't matter.
Well,
so
they're proving that so far.
Right.
Anyway, I do like her. I like Jodie as the doctor. She reminds me, I've told you both this privately, she reminds me her delivery, how fast she not only speaks, but then delivers her punchlines immediately after she ends her sentence. That reminds me a lot of David Tennant.
Yeah.
And that's good. You want to be reminded. You don't want a ripoff, but you want little reminders of this doctor used to be the other doctors.
Exactly. Little pieces of the personality.
Yeah.
Kind of lingering.
So I'm enjoying it so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've go ahead, Al.
I was just going to say, I feel the same. Unfortunately, I've only seen the first episode so far. So I don't have a lot to comment on, but I do like her, you know, great. And as after you mentioned the David Tennant similarities, thinking back, I started to recognize that.
It's funny to me how much Doctor Who I've watched, and I still have problems telling what they're saying sometimes. The accents can be so thick, and they can speak so quickly that I'll be like, wait, what?
Yeah,
she's a little rough to understand.
I got nervous when Peter Capaldi took over because I can't remember what the name of the show is, but I was watching a lot of BBC America at one time, and he was on some half-hour comedy. That's the first time I saw Peter Capaldi, and every accent was so thick, I couldn't understand a word of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching a lot of British TV at the time. I was understanding it pretty well, and so all of a sudden this guy, I recognized him immediately. Like, I'm not going to understand anything this dude says. And, you know, he used his natural Scottish accent.
Right.
I had to turn on the subtitles for the first time in Doctor Who history, but it had nothing to do with Peter. I couldn't understand Bill Potts, his companion.
Oh, yeah.
Bill spoke too fast, and she kind of used British slang, and I was like, what the hell is she saying? I couldn't follow her.
Jenna Coleman had a couple of lines that I would have to go back and rewatch. And
I miss
and, like,
Jenna Coleman.
Me, too.
Turn the subtitles on.
I said that
on.
A little too enthusiastic. Sorry about that. Oh, me too.
Listen, you creep. Jeez.
Sorry about that.
But yeah, she had a couple of lines in, and Bill was another one. There was I've gotten to the point now where, like, if I don't understand a joke, then I just let it go. You know, if a line goes by and I didn't get it, well, I'm like, well,
if you miss
right.
a line here and there, you're really not going to miss anything, you know.
Right.
But that show that I saw Capaldi on before Doctor Who, all of it. And it was supposed to be a comedy, and so, like, they hit the punchline. I don't even know what the setup was. I was able to understand him, but yeah, I was a little nervous when I saw he took
foreign
over.
Foreign language comedy can be rough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, we've seen four episodes, like Al said. He's only seen the first one. The first one, The Woman Who Fell to Earth, gave us, of course, the first episode with a new doctor, which is always a little strange. It takes a little while to get used to. That's a thing. Do you guys feel like at this point we're used to her? We kind of know her a little bit better, because it felt like Peter Capaldi, you almost didn't know him for almost a full season.
And it seemed like that was on purpose. Like, they really made him have memory gaps and issues for a long time. She's pretty close to fully functioning now, four episodes in. She's not all the way there, but she's close.
Right.
I don't feel like I know her. I feel like they've spent these first four episodes setting up her companions more than her.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's something I wanted to get to as well, is that the companions this time around, instead of just having one companion or even two, three completely distinct, all with lives that intersect with each other, but three completely distinct companions. A Pakistani policewoman, kid that's African, well, I can't say African American, he's over in
British American. African British,
or whatever.
Anyway, he's a black guy.
His stepfather,
yes.
who is an older white guy. In the first episode, you saw that the mother that connected the two of them is a fatality of the monster. Which, how about that monster in the first episode?
And
it is pretty cool.
And I thought, and tell me if you guys agree. I thought she was the most interesting of the four companions. She's the one they chose to eliminate.
She was the one that you could see would love being
right.
Would
travel
the TARDIS.
With the doctor. Yeah. This was going to make a lot of sense. And so to eliminate her, and that of course made the other, well, two of the other characters far more interesting immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm fascinated. I'm interested.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And back to your point before about, like, I don't know. Again, I'm only one episode in. I certainly don't feel like I know the new doctor yet. But I don't have a problem when they change anymore. I had a difficult time. First of all, Christopher Eccleston, I wasn't crazy about at first. You know, right. I mean, Steve, you told me about Doctor Who a bunch of times, and I'd seen a couple episodes here and there of the old stuff, the old stuff. But not really that I would have considered myself a fan. But Steve's telling me, like, you got, like, I know you. We talk about Star Trek every day. You're going to like Doctor Who. You gotta, and it took me a few tries to get going because it took a lot to warm up to Eccleston. But then I did. And then after a season, they took him away. And I was upset about it. But they replaced him with David Tennant, who is still my favorite Doctor.
Right.
Because he's the guy that really became a fan of the franchise with, was David Tennant. And because of that experience, even though I was bummed to see him go, when Matt Smith showed up, I was like, all right, let's see what this guy's got. And Matt Smith was phenomenal.
Right.
So I hate seeing a Doctor wrap up, but I'm always stoked to get to know a new Doctor.
It's as we've talked about before when we talked about the show, it's a fascinating thing that's unique and to Doctor Who.
Yes. Ironically, the one that was the most upset about ending was Christopher Eccleston, and I hate to say it, but he's at the bottom of the list of the current run.
Yeah.
And I really liked him, too.
I liked him too. It took me some warming up.
Yeah, I really did.
But by the end, I did really like him, and I was bummed out that he was gone. It would have been nice if we had gotten a little bit more of him, and still if we were able to still get the same guys in progression.
Yeah, if we could have gotten two seasons of him, I would have really loved that.
But, for sure. Yeah, I really liked right from the get-go when everything would start going wrong, and he'd get that big grin on his face.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm in my element now.
Yeah.
And that was always so much fun. That's the kind of thing. Definitely, if you're going to borrow anything from that version of the Doctor, borrow that, man.
Yeah.
Because that's fun.
But I almost forget about him sometimes when I think back. You know, like you mentioned, seeing a little bit of David Tennant's Doctor in her. But it's like I think about the, you know, Matt Smith and Peter Capaldi and Tennant, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, the other guy, too.
But the Eccleston era suffered from lack of budget.
Yes.
So
sure.
Enemies, creepers, aliens, whatever you want to call them, were very hokey.
Yeah.
Whereas you haven't gotten to the spider episode, the arachnid episode,
okay.
But those were some realistic looking spiders, and they were
extremely
creepy.
You see a
very creepy,
a huge leap forward in production value when you get into the Matt Smith era.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it's crazy because they. A lot of the other doctors, they've used a companion to kind of transition you into the new doctor. You know, you still had Rose there
right.
when David Tennant took over. But with Matt Smith, it was completely new. New doctor, new companion, new something because the production looked a lot different. I mean, you know, Stephen Moffat was running the show.
Well, think about it this way, too. You want to talk about like how bad some of the computer animation looked. That first season with the Ninth Doctor, that was 2005.
Yeah.
That's amazing to think about.
Yeah.
That it was that far back that we've been enjoying this, you know, the second coming of Doctor Who. I am fascinated that with the show, at least this current season of the show, I'm almost more fascinated, a little bit like my pro wrestling, with how the thing is made. Like, I can almost kind of, I've been watching it for so long, I know that, like, you know, the third episode is the Rosa Parks episode, which was really good, but it's like, okay, we got to do an episode where you go back in time to a specific, you know, linchpin moment kind of thing. We got to introduce the character or the companions. We got to take the companions to the future. They always want to go to the future first.
Right.
We got to take them to some future place. And there was the first episode on the planet where it was like the two racers were trying to get to a particular thing. And then it looks like next Sunday's episode is also going to be kind of a future-based episode, which would be kind of cool.
Yeah. They're all aboard now, and, you know, the way they ended that fourth episode with them all working together. Teamwork!
Yeah, against giant spiders.
Let's start the TARDIS all together now.
Yeah.
You know, and it was... So, it feels good. It feels like it's in a good place. It's
also kind of interesting that they've taken away the... and maybe this is just me noticing it, but they've taken away kind of the stinger they would have at the beginning of the episode. They would always give you, like, a scene at the beginning of the episode to
like
set
a
up...
cold
with
open?
The,
sort of,
the monster or whatever like that, and then go into the theme song, and they are not doing that anymore. They just go right into the
I
intro.
Noticed that, too. Yeah. Just in the one... I started the second episode, but...
Right. You know. But it's interesting to... It's one of those decisions that was made that's like, oh, okay. I don't know why you decided to do that, but okay, cool.
One thing I wanted to point out, because I think Doctor Who maybe does a better job of this than anybody, is using older people, not just for comedy, but to give a perspective that you wouldn't find other places. Some of my favorite companions, even if they were certain, you know, short lived, like Rory's dad, had some of the most
great
moments you'll ever find in Doctor Who, and he was only in like four or five episodes.
Or Martha's granddad, you know, was in the, the end of David Tennant's run, was in those final two episodes and stuff like that, and he was just fantastic.
Donna's dad.
Wilfred
is who you're talking about.
Yep.
Critical moments, but he wasn't in a lot of them, but they were great. And one of the new companions is a bit older.
Yep.
He's a father figure. His name is Graham.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of same thing. I mean, they're all different characters, but it's using that older guy's perspective and mixing it with a doctor who's timeless and younger companions. I love the way they do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think between the three of us, we all agree that this Jodie Whittaker season, definitely good stuff. Like, the show is not over.
No, not by any means. She's a long, long ways. And like Al was saying, four episodes into David Tennant, I wouldn't willing to say he was my all-time favorite either.
Right.
She's a long ways from being my all-time favorite. A long ways. But four in, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, it's definitely not one of those things where it's like, all right, well, I guess I'm done with this show kind of thing.
Is the one to beat for you still Tom Baker?
It is, but to some degree, it's because I grew up on that. That's right. That's who, like, my doctor is.
That's what I'm saying. Like, with me, with David Tennant will probably always be my favorite because I fell in love with the franchise while he was the doctor.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if it would have been, you know, if it was during the Matt Smith stuff, maybe it would have been him or any of the other doctors.
All these episodes that we've seen all these times. But if I would just, I don't know, I'm walking down the street and you were to pop up to me and mention Doctor Who, the first face that comes to my mind and the first image is the scarf and the hat. And it's Tom Baker still.
Yeah, right.
That's the first image. Mm-hmm. It's immediately replaced with either Matt Smith or David Tennant because I've seen those episodes more.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I still am just connected to that was the guy. I mean, when I was young,
yeah,
he was the guy.
Yeah. You know? That's what I just, you know, on that topic, I was wondering that still one to beat. Yeah.
And I don't know if you know this, but just a little Doctor Who trivia. He's still done more episodes.
Last time you came on the show to do trivia, it was a mess. if anyone doesn't know what I'm talking about, go download the Star Trek trivia special.
Right.
With Steve and Anne from The Sound Of both joined us.
Breathtaking how much we don't know about Star Trek.
Isn't it?
It was a lot of fun, though. It was, stay tuned for the MASH special coming up. I will clean up. Anyway, Doctor Who trivia. Go ahead. Lay it on me. I won't know.
He's done more episodes as the Doctor than any other Doctor.
Baker? Really?
Yeah. Yeah,
Baker. I believe that. Yeah,
wow.
He had 7 years in the role.
Yeah,
wow.
So 7 seasons.
I knew he had a long run. Yeah, I would have guessed him if you had asked me who the longest running Doctor. But I would have guessed Tom Baker. Yeah,
I just asked Al in the last segment. We were talking about this Sunday's episode of The Walking Dead as the last episode for Rick Grimes, and we both checked out on the show. So we're like, whatever, 9 seasons, whatever. But we were talking about like what kind of show could you possibly? Can you picture like? It would be more than a decade, and you'd be like, no, I still absolutely have a show. This is the 11th season of the, you know, renewed Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I think I have my answer.
Yeah.
But it feels almost unfair because Doctor Who, like, just reinvents itself when they regenerate the main character.
It is almost like a different show. It's a very similar premise throughout the entire franchise, going back to the 60s even.
Yeah.
But it's each version of the Doctor is so different that it's almost like a whole new show.
Agreed, but what goosebumps appear when suddenly a character from the past.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, it can be way in the past. I mean, I remember when they brought K-9 back.
Yes.
Right? And you're like, oh my God.
Because
again, that was from my doctor. That was from the fourth doctor.
Oh, so we saw Tom, the Day of the Doctor.
Done it a couple times.
Was like the greatest.
Wow. Yeah. That was so good.
Ever. And you got to see, you got to see Matt Smith and David Tennant playing off each other the entire episode.
Right.
And
plus Rose.
Yep, and Rose came back. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they gave us right at the end of it, Tom Baker. Not so much playing the Doctor. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe not.
Yeah. But he was there.
All right, well, there's no maybes about it. Nerd Radio will come back next week. Thank you so much for being on the show this week, Steve.
Yeah, always love an invite.
Make sure you download The Sound Of with us, Steve Black and Ann Carlini. What are you guys doing this week?
taking the week off.
Okay, well, make sure you download last week's episode of the Sound Up
and come back next week.
And
I
come
guess.
Back next week.
No, I do want to. I wanted to cross my. Steve and I were talking about this in the hallway, but they sometimes do these like really fun games with each other on the show. Mm-hmm. And the more recent is this like two episodes ago now?
Yeah.
The Sound of Drums.
Hey, was Doctor Who tie-in.
Yeah.
It's a huge Doctor Who episode, by the way, The Sound of Drums. Sorry. Anyway.
Yeah, so...
right on.
But do you want to... I thought it was a great game. Do you want to describe to the Nerd Radio listeners what you did?
Sure. I took isolated drum tracks from studio recordings, and then I made my co-hosts, my panel, guess what song it was based solely on the drums.
Solely on the drums? So
all you can hear in the mix is the drums. And these are songs we played on the radio a bunch, so... You know, a couple of them I thought were real easy and people got right away. And I don't want to say they didn't.
And I don't want to say any of the songs because I want people to go listen to it and play along. But I will say like, and you know, so Steve told me like, oh, I'm curious in your opinion. Would you mind going and listen to this episode? Well, yeah, of course. And I'm sitting there when he described the game, I was like, that's a great idea. Because the other one was what you had a voice actor buddy.
Yeah, we did voice actors. We did guitars. We had to name a song by its solo. We brought in a live guitarist for that.
The voice actor was a lot of fun. Like it was a buddy of yours that does impressions of like Peter Griffin or Archie Bunker. And they did song lyrics, right? In that in the character's voice.
Yeah.
So and it was like... It throws you off because it's in this crazy voice. You don't expect Peter Griffin to, you know,
Beavis and Butthead doing Metallica lyrics. And
you know. But so the drums thing, like he tells me this. I'm like, you know what? I love the drums. Like when I listen to music, that's the first thing I listen to when I'm at a concert. I spend most of my time watching the drummer. I love the drums. I'm going to ace this thing, Steve. I got it. I got 1.5 points.
Really?
I got 1.5 points. And one of them, I was just like, I know this. And the good Reverend. On the show mentioned the band name. I was like, oh, it's this song. And then the only other one was like my all-time growing up favorite band ever. Immediately I was like, oh, it's this song by that band. Next.
Yeah, see, I feel like I can nail this, so I'm gonna have to listen to it and report back to me.
I want to know how many you get.
All right.
And anyone listening to us, of course, reach out to us, give us some feedback on Nerd Radio. Also, if you check out the Sound of, we'll be sure to pass it on. Nerd Radio 101 on social media.
All right, I mentioned it at the top of the show, I mentioned it at the bottom of the show, this weekend, YumaCon out at out in Detroit, downtown. Make sure you go to YumaCon, YOUMACON.com to check it out. Nerd Radio will be down there, and we'll be back next week with a bunch of stories about people running around in costumes.
I'm in a difficult situation here. I mean, after all, you're nerds.
Nobody asked you, Kevin!
Have a great weekend.
Golden Radio.
I know.
See you later,
nerds.
And we're out.
Mm-hmm.
I went down to the crossroads trying to get it right.
Yeah, just like that.
Exactly like that.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.